Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much. I hope post-lunch and post-whiskey and everything, everybody can, it's the end of a long, warm day in the hall, so I'll try and make this as engaging and as quick as possible. I'm Sarah McLean, and I work for an organisation called Outer Hebrides Tourism. We are what's known as a destination management organisation. Most areas in Scotland and indeed across England and other parts of the UK have them. So where we tend to have big national tourism agencies like Visit Scotland or Visit England, the local and regional picture is a little bit more diverse and tends to be managed at that local level in different structures and different models. And here in the islands we have Outer Hebrides Tourism, which is our kind of business name, and then Visit Outer Hebrides, which is our kind of brand. It's what we offer to our visitors. Over the years, we've grown from being what in the early days was really just a sort of mostly accommodation network to, as you will see, doing a lot more. This kind of covers roughly how we operate. So we're a small team. There's only four of us, three and a half full-time equivalent posts in the team. We are governed by a board of directors. We are independent, so they are volunteer directors who are drawn from our membership. But we also work very closely through what we call the Local Tourism Leadership Group, which is ourselves, the local authority, the local economic agency, Highlands and Islands Enterprise, and Visit Scotland also have a seat at the table. Our members are the main engine of what we do. As I say, we started off mainly with accommodation members, and now I think it's around about a sort of 60% accommodation, 20% experiences, makers, arts, cultural members, and another 20% who are kind of food and drink orientated and hospitality side of things. These are the areas that we work across. So I've mentioned membership. Probably our biggest asset, which I'll say a little bit more about in a moment, is our website, visitoutherhebrides.co.uk. That's our biggest asset and is our kind of main focus of a lot of what we do. We have a strong social media presence. We do general promotion and marketing for the islands. We manage various projects and we represent the industry at a community and a national and regional level. So good you got it twice. So our industry representation works on a couple of fronts as well. We try to engage with data and insights. As you'll see as I go through the presentation, a lot of the data we have locally is quite out of date. And this morning I had to dive out and to another meeting and we were discussing that very thing and how we bring a lot of the information we have about the current industry up to speed and how who pays for that. The example I always give, it's a little bit like public toilets. Everybody wants to use data, but nobody really wants to pay for it. Our members aren't keen on paying a surplus so that we can send them more and more surveys. It used to be something that our public sector partners supported with, but that's proven a little bit harder to do as budgets have restricted, but it is absolutely key to making the case for investment and projects going forward is being able to say how many people do we have, what do they do, how do they behave, what do they spend, etc. We also lobby on behalf of the industry, so speaking to government or around key issues. Ferries is the obvious one. We've had a lot of trouble with ferries in recent years and making sure that we're letting the right people know about the impact of kind of strategic and policy decisions or when things go wrong. That was a role that really kind of developed in COVID, I think. It wasn't a role we used to do quite so prominently, but it became clear that that connection into local communities and being able to tell local businesses what was happening became something that we started to do more and more back then. We also speak to the press and media fairly frequently. It can be very light stuff just about the beauties of the islands, or it can be more on that lobbying side. And we'll also sort of try and feed the media as well with kind of positive stories about the islands and what we have to offer. And we also feed into legislation. So we've had a couple of areas recently where there's been public consultations, and we will always try and put forward the local island view. So I mentioned the website. It's a bit of a big beast. I think we have over 300 pages on the website now. It is the number one island website. We've got some pretty good statistics on there of over 2 million hits a year, around 500,000 individual users. People come to the website, some of them through that sort of tourism visitor traffic. Other people are just looking about for local information. Some are people who are coming to the islands to work. It does tend to come up at the top of searches, and we work quite hard to make sure that that stays the case and that it stays fresh. We also, within the main site, we manage the Hebridean Way long-distance walking and cycling route information page, which is really critical to kind of linking people's experience through the islands. So a lot of people like to start in Barra and finish in Ness, but you can do it either way. We did once have an inquiry if we recommended it go south to north because that was the prevailing wind, and we were able to say no, you can choose if you want to go north to south or south to north. But that route brings in a lot of communities on the way and encourages people to stop off and at designated pit stops and spend money, take an overnight and extend through, not just, you know, go to the island population centres for accommodation and services. And then we have a lot of wider information about the islands and where to eat, how to behave when you're here, what to see and what to do. For us, the website is a platform for everybody. So we're not a for-profit organisation. We need to cover our own costs, but we really encourage people to use the reach that we have through the website. It's Alan was talking there about everything, all things digital. And, you know, one of the things we quite often hear when we're talking to partners, especially sometimes in the community, or it is they will say, oh, we're going to set up a website. And we say, well, you can, but perhaps just put a piece on our, you know, on our site, and then you will instantly have access to the number of viewers and users that we have, rather than starting to build that following yourself. We are up to, I think, around 130,000 followers across our various social media platforms, Instagram and Facebook being by far the most popular. So what do? We try and talk about the islands through promotional campaigns that are themed. So this was one that we kind of really tried to emphasise the sort of the feel-good factor of coming to the islands through our wellbeing campaign. We've had campaigns solely focused on Gaelic, which were hugely successful and quite confidence-building. There was fairly, I would say, modest objectives around that campaign, and the targets we set ourselves were blown out of the water in terms of how much people engaged with the posts, shared things. The reach was phenomenal, much more than we expected. So it proved the point, I think, that people that we aren't put off by Gaelic. They may not understand it, they may not speak it, but they see it very much as key to the island experience, and they're actually really keen to engage with it where they see it. We also, that's the kind of themed promotions we've done. We also do regional ones. We've been doing a bit of promotion over the last year or so around Uist in particular. And we mentioned the Uist Unearthed project. That's it featuring down there on the bottom right-hand side there, the person holding the phone. So you can hold your app up to an otherwise bare bit of grass and you can see what it would have looked like with the heritage site thousands of years ago. So again, that's us just kind of taking the content that's already there, our partners who are working in other areas in the islands are creating and putting together, and our job is really to make it look good and to sell it to the world. Lorna used this phrase earlier. I didn't pay her, but it was interesting because it is something you hear all the time, that the islands are a special place. So we've taken that as our kind of responsible, sustainable tourism message and broken it down into the acronym of parking, litter, animals, camping and engagement, because we do know that with an increase in visitor numbers and with any kind of tourism, there is an impact on the community, and that is something that needs to be managed. And I think in certain parts of Lewis and Harris, particularly over more recent years, whether it's the impact of the kind of post-COVID staycations or the upturn in cruise traffic we've seen, there is a slight, I wouldn't say maybe unease or a slight caution there around where does tourism take us and what is the impact on communities and how do we manage that. So we're very mindful of that and try to promote our various messages in quite a simple way, but just to keep putting that message in front of people that it is a place where people live and work, and just to be mindful of that as they go about. So who are we talking to with all this messaging and campaigning? I mentioned how out of date our data is. So the last full visitor survey was done back in 2017. And back then we had around 219,000 visitors to the islands per year. We reckon that has probably risen to around about the 300,000 mark now for this year, if we take that as a baseline and then add in what we know we received in cruise passengers this year, which was round about the 70,000 to 80,000 mark. More recently, Visit Scotland did a high-level survey of activity, and their information showed us that about 66% of visitors to the islands last year were from the UK. So it is mostly a domestic market, but we do have a little bit of international travel. Not as much as the rest of Scotland, but we still do are a must-see destination for a lot of people. 78% of people were repeat visitors, so that again echoes that message about needing to keep your offer fresh. We need to keep finding new things that people will like to do. So if they're coming back year on year, they want new exhibitions, they want new products, they want new things to do. They do tend to be older in the older age bracket, but that often means more disposable income. And very often we know they're often on their second holiday of the year. So their main holiday will be somewhere else and they will come for their week or their long weekend to the islands as a regular thing. Again, this is going back to 2017, but value then was placed around $65 million in terms of economic impact. And we reckon that that's probably gone up to nearly $100 million today. We have about a capacity of about 7,000 bed spaces across the island, but we do have seasonality challenges. So where there are peak months where that is full, it drops right down to only about 30% occupancy in the winter months. What do they come to see? Again, this is drawn from past visitor surveys. So we know that things like archaeology, heritage, art galleries, museums are critical to what people want to see when they come here. These percentages are slightly higher than the Scottish average. So when you look at what people say they've come to Scotland for, they're slightly lower. So people do specifically seek out the Hebrides for these type of experiences. Interestingly, we can only go as far as the question goes. So are we asking the right questions? Because the survey doesn't really tell us how much people came for language or how much people came for specific food and drink experiences. I think it could do with a wee bit of updating, but it does give us a flavour of the fact that we know that these things are drivers. People are interested in our culture. Our culture tends to work across these various creative industries. These are really, really broad, so apologies to anybody in the room if they've been left off, but these are just a kind of breakdown roughly of our kind of main areas of creative activity. So our creative hubs, I've included both our art centres, but also our kind of big creative cultural events as well, which take place mostly in the summer months, but do tend to act as a kind of hub for other activities. They bring in an opportunity for makers to sell, they bring people in for a specific time to a specific part of the islands, and they do tend to be really key economic drivers alongside the premises-based hubs, which are open all year round. Cultural heritage, we've mentioned a lot of the kind of tangible sites like Calnish and, archaeology, but there is also things like our genealogy. We have a huge diaspora across the world, and people are very interested in coming to know more about their history here and how they may be connecting to their local family history. And that's something that the Common Yachtries, the local historical societies, work quite hard to provide answers for people who are coming to research their own family. I think we sometimes underestimate the power of that. We have an amazing platform through a lot of our broadcasting and media resource, which is kind of disproportionately yeah, we're lucky. We have a disproportionate broadcasting industry here on these wee tiny islands, thanks to Gaelic. And it gives us a platform to get an awful lot of very good quality content that just makes the place look beautiful, if nothing else, as well as telling our stories out to the world. We have a thriving literature scene, and Lorna spoke earlier about textiles and all the associated benefits that we get from Harris Tweed. So we have a rich, rich pot of different resources and assets, and it's a case of trying to kind of coordinate all of that into something that's cohesive and that people can actually engage with and becomes an economic impact for us. I went into the archives here, and the last, I think, creative and cultural industry strategy we had was going back to 2018, which, again, just building on the previous slide, gives you an idea of how important the creative industries are to the islands. So at that point, sort of 5-6 years ago, the creative industries accounted for the highest proportion of school leaver destinations, so in terms of courses, jobs, apprenticeships, that school leavers were going to, they were most predominantly spread across that definition at the top of digital jobs, performing and visual art, music, heritage and so on. At that stage, creative industries employed more people than crofting, fisheries, garages and so on put together. There was a 9.1 million contribution to the local economy, and combined tourism and creative industries were the two top areas where people were looking to start up or grow businesses, according to the local business support service based within the local authority. So absolutely critical to our economy, but in quite a patchwork way. So you're working across a lot of fronts which are coming together to make a big cohesive whole. And feeding this kind of cycle here. So we know that culture and heritage attract visitors. We know that that then creates demand for the products and experiences that people want to see. They want that authenticity. The more demand there is, then people tend to rise to it and create a greater variety and quality of products and experiences. And then the better the quality products and experiences that are available, then the more our reputation and our profile as a centre of cultural excellence grows. And that drive further drives the attraction of more visitors. So it's keeping a balance within that cycle, I think, that's the challenge. In terms of what we do as an organisation directly, I think our food and drink model is a really good case study. So we've been working on the Eat, Drink, Hebrides trail now for probably the best part of 10 years. It started out just as literally a trail, so food and drink producers and hospitality venues could sign up and have this lovely wee badge on their gate or on their premises. And it's now become so, so, so much more. So we've moved from simply having a bit of a leaflet and, as I say, some window stickers to now doing a lot of external networking. So, in similar to your own visit here today, for a lot of you, we've been out on food journeys to various places to see how they're doing it in other parts of the world. We've held a lot of internal networking sessions like this, but also based around introducing people within their own premises, so actually taking people into food production shops, into restaurants, into cafes, and introducing the professionals to the professionals kind of thing to try and increase, orders, local produce, support local supply chains. We also do a bit of off-island promotion, so to try and get that Outer Hebrides brand out there at a national level. And then we do a lot of work to promote our individual members and what they have to offer throughout the year. So it's very busy. We're fortunate that one of our posts is a food and drink officer post, and that has made a critical difference in how much we've been able to do specifically in this sector. So, as I say, we've gone from the Eat, Drink, Hebrides trail to now having our full booklet, which has almost 100 members in it. I've brought some of our other booklets along, but and help yourselves, I can leave more as well if we run out. The Eat, Drink, Hebrides one is actually sold out for the year, so until we reprint next year, we don't have any more of those. And all this effort is reflected in our winning last year, the Scotland Food and Drink Excellence Award for Regional Food Tourism. And just this week, we came runners-up to, I think we were pipped at the post by Spain, so I don't know if there's anybody from Spain here today, but I think we, Spain, Italy and ourselves were shortlisted for a World Tourism Food Award. Spain was. Congratulations to Spain, but you know, it's good that we are being recognised on that kind of European stage for the efforts that we're making. So that's making us a food destination, but we are aware that the whole craft and artisan skills and all the cultural products that we talked about are equally as much of an asset for us as our food and drink. So Made in the Outer Hebrides is a concept that we inherited from the local authority back in the day. They used to produce booklets that went out, including listings for local artists and craft producers. When the local council stopped producing that publication, there was a gap, so we took the brand on. We kind of took it on in our own image, rebranded it, but have carried it on with the same kind of essence. So I know there's been quite a bit of talk today around about quality and how do you kind of control, do sort of quality control and keep authenticity. And we try and do that with our listings in the booklet. So say there's copies of it here and plenty more, but we do have evidence in here of all local producers, different galleries, different hubs. This is something that people can order from our website in advance of their holiday, so they can sit and kind of familiarise themselves with where they might want to go or things that they might want to buy when they're here. They can also access it digitally as a download off our website. So I think from our point of view, the benefits of producing these are obvious, but we still do have always a wee bit of a sales pitch to do to bring people on board and kind of convincing them it'll be the best £100 that they spent in terms of promoting their business is sometimes challenging. But then I think when they see the reach that it has and they see other people getting business from it, then it tends to be a word of mouth kind of network that develops. So last year was our first year of taking on Made, and I think we had around 70 sign-ups. This year we published the printed version and we were up to 83. So the guide breaks down the offer island by island, and we know based on our experiences with food and drink that we have a lot of scope for development around networking, collaboration, promoting products, tying in with the initiatives like this. That's just a wee extract from the inside. So this is my final slide. Couple of you I was sitting with earlier, I said, oh, I've left a slide out in my presentation because this whole concept came up as being a good idea, and I was able to say, we're actually already going to do this. So this is a new page. This is a brand new reveal for today's event. An exclusive, is that what they call it? So we are creating basically a portal. We would love to be able to create a part of the website where we could undertake sales on behalf of others. We're not quite there yet because we only have the small team, we don't have a fulfillment centre and so on. So you can't buy directly from us, but what we're going to have through the Boo Hebrides, Booas Gaelic for shop. So we will have, this will take you straight on to products that are available from the islands. So any of our members who have online selling facilities who are already set up to do online retail will be one click through here. So that's recognising that a lot of people, whether they're on cruise vessels or whether perhaps they're cycling or they may just not have time to purchase something, or they may make a big purchase that they can't take away. There may be many reasons that people don't buy at that very moment in time, but they do remember the place, the holiday becomes important to them, the experience of being here becomes important to them, and they may want to come back and have that chance to buy authentic products. So instead of having to trawl through different listings to try and find specific things, this page will take you direct to people who will sell online. So it's a kind of not quite one click, but two clicks through to being able to shop directly. So we're just about to launch this autumn in time for Christmas. Initially, it is just food and drink producers because it was food and drink money that we've built it with, but we will then be expanding it next year into including craft members as well. So that's something to come and something that we can can potentially develop. And I think that's everything. That was a bit of a gallop.
Thank you so much, Sarah. You're welcome. I think that was such a perfect example of the way that working together has impact, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That you have a louder voice, you can be more visible, and it's really an important way to work. So thank you for that. Thank you. I'm going to ask you to...